Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 15th, Marathon Monday.
Woohoo!
Today we're joined by our co-host, the author, educator, and marathoner, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. So you will be competing in today's marathon, huh?
I will. God, I will. Yep. Looking forward to it.
We'll be anxious to find out your time and how well that you survived. Number one, that you survived. That's great. Congratulations. Not everyone can run a Boston Marathon, you know. That is quite a personal feat.
It is an exciting day.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's a climate connection. As you jog up Heartbreak Hill, I want you to think of a climate connection to
I'm going to think about how I yearn for the days when it wasn't so cold and rainy. That's what I'm going to be thinking about.
Mariah, the politics of climate have taken a shift in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, where the urgency and sort of the primal urgency of the dangers of climate change have sunk in at a level amongst young people, right? And they are kind of, they are, you know, the children shall lead us, in a sense, into a future. Tell me, what's happened lately, basically, with kids taking on the establishment, so to speak?
Right. Well, I mean, we talk so often about Greta Thunberg, who's quite the heroine, with leading lots of protests, with school walkouts. So we've got a couple shows about that. I encourage you to go back and, dear listener, to go back and listen to those shows, because she's really quite a force. But she continues to inspire youth to get involved. There is all kinds of ways that they're sort of drawing attention to basically what they say in an article I read, that adults' failure to act. So they're marching in the streets and they're swarming congressional offices, they're lobbying, they're walking out of school. I read an article that says even the Girl Scouts have become involved, encouraging local troops to work on climate change related activities.
Really?
Yeah.
Definitely.
So really,
so what's the distinction? So the Greta Thunberg is sort of this more amorphous thing. And whereas the Friday strikes seem to be kind of self-organized, but the Sunrise Movement is a much more self-conscious thing here in the United States, right?
Yeah.
And they're distinct. Right, so I guess the point being they're distinct things.
They're distinct, yeah. I mean, so Greta Thunberg, she's just has been on her own. At one point, she even was getting some sort of flack from people saying that she's a puppet. People are writing her speeches for her. She's getting paid. And she put this very eloquent and beautiful piece of writing up that said, no, I'm doing this because this is what I believe in. And I don't care if anyone else participates, but someone needs to say something because my future's on the line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been kind of out there on her own. But there is also the Sunrise Movement, which is here in the United States. And that's been putting a lot of legal pressure, you know, going into a lot of protests, and famously, I think what they protested in front of Nancy Pelosi's mm-hmm. office, right?
Mm-hmm. And Mitch McConnell and various other people.
Yep. So they're very active, which is great. And, you know, these sort of movements are great. They're just an accessible way for folks, for children really, who aren't old enough to vote, but are saying, look, you're taking away my future. There's a 13-year-old that was quoted in an article in Think Progress who said, my house could be underwater in 50 years, and I'd like to avoid that. Very practical, you know, sort of matter of fact. Yeah. I'd like to not have my house be underwater in 50 years. I like where I live, you know. And so, and this 13-year-old was saying stuff needs to be done about climate change and it's not happening. So he likened it to being part of a school group project when you're the only one who's working on the project and nobody else is doing anything. And you're kind of like, hello, folks, could you help me out here? This is really important.
I mean, I think it's a remarkable level of maturity, though, because when I think back to that age, it was not, I'm not sure I had the consciousness that would have or even the ability, the emotional ability to grapple the sort of with the scope of the issues that these kids are facing, right? I mean, it's basically literally the kind of the end of the world, right? And they seem to be able to say, okay, we're going to take action.
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly involved in environmental issues, right? I was always chasing my poor parents down to make sure they were recycling and turning off the water when they brushed their teeth and all of these things, but not at all in any political way. I mean, I also, of course, sort of devoted a lot of my studies and interest into learning about environmental science. But yeah, I mean, these are really engaged politically. Kids that are politically engaged and using themselves to make an impact and have an impact and come together. And it's
remarkable.
Inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, right. You see the various, various comments, as you say, that, you know, the kids, some grown-ups going to says, oh, the kids are going to save the world. And the kid says, yeah, well, it would be nice if you helped us save to the old,
yeah,
to the old.
Right.
It'd be nice if the adults helped the kids to save the world. Well, I guess so. The kids are out there. The kids are all right. They're doing the right things. There was at the same time a hearing in front of the U.S. Congress. So, as you may know, dear listener, the Democratic Party took back the House of Representatives last November and has proceeded to try to schedule bona fide, thoughtful discussions about climate change in various kinds of congressional hearings. And they had recently two guys invited in to speak. One was a guy named John Kerry, who you might have heard of. He's Secretary of State, former Massachusetts Senator, presidential candidate, and big-time climate hawk, and was one of the major architects of the 2015 Paris Accords. And the other is a guy named Chuck Hagel, who is also a U.S. Senator, a Republican, was Secretary of Defense back in the days when we bothered having cabinet secretaries and not acting, you know, not acting cabinet secretaries. He was a bona fide Secretary of Defense. And both of them, from both sides of the aisle, went to this committee to try to explain to the committee about climate change. And I, by all accounts, from what I've seen, I don't know what you saw, Mariah, but by all accounts, they gave very thoughtful information about the threat to the military, the threat to society. But what turned out is that the conservative side of the aisle in that committee continued to basically mock and pretend there's not an issue, to the point where Secretary Kerry looked at the chairman, Elijah Cumming, of this committee and said, this is not a serious discussion, right? And the room kind of laughed because there was one guy holding a fossil, you know, sort of a fish, right? You can buy the little fossil pieces at the Museum of Science. The representative had that, said, look, there's a fossil here, right? It had, but the world has changed since then. It just is terrible. It's terrible. I mean, yeah. Despite, I think that the
were
theatrics,
there more snowballs being thrown?
Yeah. Well, the theatrics of the conservative side of the aisle, no limits. But it's good to know that the committee is trying to do a serious investigation of climate change as a preparation for things like the Green New Deal.
You know, I mean, it's interesting because it's such a, it's just shows how sort of, I don't know if myopic's the right word, but how small that is. When I read an article in Think Progress by Joe Rome, where Russia is currently trolling the United States on its climate, its terrible climate action. And the irony of that is that Russia has been deemed as its actions have been deemed as critically insufficient by the Climate Action Tracker group because they are not known for their climate action, but they're better than we are, right? And so here we are at the very bottom globally where everyone else in the world is taking this seriously. And then we have this very powerful small group, this very powerful group within the United States that makes it sound like it's a joke. And it's so completely, you know, the blinders are on in this really strange and devastating way, really. You know, just to push a little further into the what the Joe Rome wrote about the with Russia, they actually have this interesting situation where their climate emissions, they've pledged, they signed onto the climate, the Paris Agreement, right? So we're the only country in the whole entire world, last in out of the major countries, to not sign the Paris Agreement, as we've talked about. But Russia jumped on with a 25 to 30% reduction below 1990. But due to the collapse of the Soviet Union, their emissions have already dropped 34%. So they actually signed on to allow them to pollute more. So they really don't have a leg to stand on to mock us. And yet they actually do, because we're so, our head is so much in the sand about this. We're in discussions, I guess, with about the Arctic and how to handle the Arctic for development in the Arctic region. And the United States, basically one of the foreign ministers in Russia, the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, said, you know, our American colleagues won't even let us mention the Paris Agreement in the strategy. You know, like, what is wrong with these idiots? So
I agree with you. Not that the Russians have any credibility in my book, but the you know, whether
we have less credibility right now. Well, I mean, that's the sad
in terms
part.
Of climate stuff. To be sure. And I think that the other sort of mixed news of the week is that the Mr. Trump has signed several more orders to try to allow. The keystone, so the executive order, right? I mean, the thing that the conservative wing of the American politics ranted and raved about for Obama signing executive orders. It seems to me the only thing that Mr. Trump can do is to sign executive orders because I guess it makes him feel good. But he signed an executive order to try to allow Keystone XL pipeline to move forward in the hopes that somehow the president was not a federal agency, so that the recent legal ruling that stopped the pipeline that would force a federal agency to take some action. Trump says, oh, well, I'm not an agency. I can just give an executive order because I'm president. Flip side is that his order to allow drilling in the Arctic, I guess, got overturned. It was declared unlawful. So we hope that that the courts can continue to buck these kind of crazy executive orders that, I mean, it's almost like the Mad King. I mean, he just, but then today or recently he went down to Texas to sign yet another executive order that basically allows oil companies to violate the Clean Water Act. So that's going to go to court and probably get turned over. But he had the ironic choice of going to a town called Crosby, to sign a bill that would encourage pipeline development, where, in fact, a week ago in that same town, there was a petrochemical explosion at a plant and somebody got killed, right? So
sad.
We need to, so, I mean, all of this, all of the terribleness of the at the federal level needs to be counteracted by people thinking about voting and being involved in the political process, making their voices heard, calling up their Congress people, Congress critters, as somebody says, and telling them what you think, how this is just an unacceptable pattern of behavior at the federal level.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's, I read an article about how Trump is touting some of the current, you know, good environmental statistics about cleaner water and cleaner air and, you know, climate emissions going down, touting them, claiming them for his own, so that he can say, look at all the good things I've done for the environment, because he does see that as a potential category for the 2020 election. And he wants to make sure that he looks good in that area. And, you know, so just making sure you do your research to understand, like, he may tell you that he's got a really green record, but if you dig deeply, you can see that it's actually not the case.
Well, I find it so outrageous that not even just Trump, but oftentimes you will hear people say, well, we don't need new regulations. Look, the water is much cleaner than it was 50 years ago, right? So why do we, it's like, okay, it's cleaner because we had regulations, right?
Yeah.
They kind of missed that step.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
I think that all this sort of unhappy news just points out the fact that we need to be active, we need to be involved, and we need to talk to our legislators to make sure that they know that this is just an unacceptable level of behavior. So there you go. I tell you what, Mariah, I will put up some links to things we talked about on the
Oh.
blog.
And also there's that climate, that MCAN,
Oh, yeah.
right?
Thank you so much for
Just,
reminding me. I wanted to mention that. Okay, mark your calendar. April 27th, Saturday, April 27th, all day long, at the Worcester State University will be the Local Environmental Action Conference. I highly urge you to sign up for it. It's designed to be accessible and affordable. There are lots of very interesting workshops that would help people in towns, in Massachusetts, of course, but from any state, figure out how to get traction as they try to take climate action. There'll be training on how to talk to your local officials, how to raise money, how to figure out what needs to happen first in your town. There'll be discussions about the Green New Deal, state policy on transportation, lots and lots of very interesting stuff. And perhaps the most interesting thing, the most beneficial aspect of the conference is that you will get to meet other climate activists that are as crazy as you are, dear listener, right? You're listening to this podcast. You care about this issue. Believe me, there's other people who also care about the issue. And if you meet them, you will feel much, much better. I mean, it's worth the price of admission just to go in and know that you have kindred spirits in the world. So I urge you on April 27th, you can get online. Just Google Local Environmental Action 2019. It'll bring you to the website. You can sign up, come out to Worcester on April 27th, and we'll have a blast. I'll be there. I look forward to seeing you. Please come up and say hello. Say that you heard about the conference on the Climate Minute. All right. Thank you, Mariah, for reminding of that. That's very important. Well, let's see. Just remind everybody, if you want to send an email with comments, you can tell us how crazy we are or something you want to hear about. It's an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'll close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, where that plan uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, thanks very much for being here, Mariah.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you in Worcester. Bye-bye.
Very cool.